Finding the right cleat can be transformative. Believe me, I've worn plenty during my career. So getting the right balance is crucial. The cleat needs to feel good on your foot, but also feel good connecting with the ball. The New Balance Furon 7 Plus is built with both of those points in mind, offering overall comfort and precise striking in the game's fastest moments. Because, as I learned the hard way, because I didn't possess much of it, speed matters in soccer. That's why the Furon 7 Plus is built for accuracy and precision at rapid pace, and is engineered specifically for use on firm ground. Why is this the ideal cleat, I hear you ask? Well, not to get too scientific, but the Furon 7 Plus offers a lightweight yet supportive hypo-knit with mesh lining upper construction and is paired with offset lacing for a truer strike of the ball, which is a long way of me saying that your game will immediately get better when these are on your feet. Learn more and purchase the Furon at newbalance.com. I'm Jimmy Cream Cheese Conrad alongside Mr. Hollywood Heath Pierce and Charlie Chuck Mike and Davies. And today, not only are we going to talk about the homegrown teenage goalkeeping sensation from the Chicago Fire, Gaga Slonina, who is getting signed by Chelsea. Maybe you've heard of that club or not, and all the positive ripple effects from that move. But first, we have to talk about more important matters. And that is stud midfielder for the U.S. men's national team, Weston McKennie, dislocating his shoulder a few days ago while training with Juve, which means he's now slated to be out of action for the next 3 to 4 weeks, which gives me pause. And not because I'm worried he won't be ready for the World Cup. I'm sure he will have plenty of time to recover his fitness and get sharp again. It gives me pause because Weston, Tyler Adams, Christian Pulisic, Timo Weah, Anthony Robinson, Miles Robinson, Jardine Des, Gio Reyna, they've all missed large portions of games due to injuries. So for all the talent we have in this player pool, maybe the trade-off is that we're injury-prone. Charlie, what do you say?
I say no. We are not injury-prone. People go through injuries. That's just normal. I would not say we're injury-prone. And it's a month. It's not 6 months. We're not talking, oh, my God, he's going to miss the World Cup with this injury. It's a shoulder injury. Yes, it could be significant because from what I understand when I was playing, if someone had a shoulder injury, it would last. It would kind of just be there throughout, you know, the year. It would never really went away. I think it takes a long time, similar to like a severe ankle sprain. But I'm not worried. I am confident that – and we have a lot of players. Considering the September friendlies, this could be a great opportunity to see some other guys. You know, let's not forget Brent Aaronson's pass in that friendly. Do I have to go there? I mean, Patrick Bamford got that ball and was like, oh, man, this boy can play. So – maybe it's another opportunity for Brent Aaronson to play there. It's another opportunity to see Luca De La Torre. So, yes, we know Weston's going to be fine. It's only a month. At worst, six weeks.
Okay. And Gio Reyna can slot centrally as well. Heath, your thoughts on this? I mean, we do have guys. I know that Charlie's playing the positive side of this, and I appreciate that. But there is some evidence that we are a little bit injury-prone. And when our guys get hurt, they're out for a while. It's not like these, you know, one-weekers. We're out for multiple weeks, potentially months. I just feel like one of these guys that I named just a little bit earlier is probably going to be out for the World Cup, and that's going to be absolutely devastating for them on an individual level, like it is for Miles Robinson, but I don't know which one. I just thought that probably one of them are going to be out, and that sucks already.
Don't be that crazy. Come on.
It's not isolated to our national team, Charlie. Every national team's going to go through this.
With every injury comes an opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like we're short of options. I mean, even like Richard Desma, who gets 2 minutes in the Dutch Cup with PSV and they win. He even had a highlight for that 2 minutes just being on the pitch. That's maybe another possibility to get him into the fold and see what he can do.
Yeah, I mean, weirdly, we've tried a lot of players in this pool, and then that 11 has gotten clearer and clearer for us, but you still have to have depth, and now we're starting to see sort of breadth and depth within this national team pool and a chance to use it. And if you're Greg Berhalter, it could be a perfect excuse to slot a player like a Gio Reyna into a spot or whatever to look at something different. But It is a real eye opener for us when we go through these ebb and flow of like players playing. And then we had a week last week where everyone scored on our national team pool. And then you have a week where now you've got a few injuries again. And so it makes me nervous because it really makes you open your eyes to, wait, are we as deep as we think we are? We're deep in terms of potential talent, but are we deep in terms of talent in this national team? And you get a chance to look at these players.
Charlie, you seem like you have something to say.
Jimmy, I get how
he called you by your first name. This is
he did. This is serious.
Like my mom, you're not cream cheese right now. You're Jimmy now.
All right, Jim, listen to me. what I'm gonna say is, we can't be worried. It's, and this is the realization is in a World Cup, any number of these players can go down injured. Maybe it's a red card. Maybe it's an injury. Somebody has to step up. So I'd like to know if Weston McKennie gets injured during the World Cup, leading up to the World Cup, who would fit in? Gio Reyna, for me, I've been saying this from the very beginning. He feels very comfortable in tight spaces in that central midfield position. I think this is a perfect opportunity to see what he can do. Now, being in that position, he's also going to have to defend. He has to get his hands dirty. I think he's capable of doing that. I don't think we've always seen that from him, but yeah, he could be in the midfield. And with Yunus Musah and him controlling the game, man, dribbling out of trouble, being able to alleviate pressure on the dribble, that's a fantastic and dynamic midfield.
No, I like that. I think, at least in my perfect world view of the national team or any national team or any club team, you can't be overly reliant on one particular player. So Heath, I'll throw this to you. Is there any player on our national team that is irreplaceable? Because we've done it without Christian Pulisic. We've done it without Tyler Adams. We've obviously rotated our goalkeepers. Our back line has been a mismatch of players throughout qualifying and in friendlies. Is there any player that you think is irreplaceable? Because I feel like
you're setting me up to get attacked on the internet.
Jim, I'm not.
My answer might not be. Jim.
Thank you.
Hey, Jim. Jim, I don't think any one player is irreplaceable. I mean, Gio Reyna, who's probably continues to still have the most upside of anybody, has been out of the national team for a while, and we make do. It is a team sport, and so there's no one glaring error. I think because we don't have a goal scorer, that would probably be the one. If we had an out-and-out goal scorer right now where you have this glaring error, I think that is a gigantic hole in itself. But in terms of the way we play, where I'd be most nervous is if we lost another center back. MMA, I think we're seeing that depth now that's pushed guys like Sebastian Legette to the outskirts of the national team and the depth of that pool. But again, I'm thinking of a Pulisic or a Timo Weah being hard to replace. Nah, because you have Brendan Aaronson. So yeah, it's tough to say. Even Kellen Acosta has slotted in at times. Weirdly, I'm thinking about our center backs. If you lost one more center back, I'd be really, really worried about this team. Specifically,
who could we not play with? If there's one player, it's Yunus Musah. That is the one player you cannot recreate. There's nobody else in the pool that can do what he does.
What about Anthony Robinson? Because he's really made the left back spot his own, and I don't feel like we have. Not that we don't have players that are, somewhere in that space. George Bello, but I mean, he's still young. I mean, Anthony Robinson for me is interesting because, okay, maybe defensively he could be a little bit better, but getting forward, really understanding his role, I feel like he's been a little more disciplined in the last few games, especially in the June friendlies, in knowing when to go and when to stay. Outside of him bombing forward and being right next to Brendan Aaronson.
No, he didn't. He has that. No. These guys bomb forward.
Depends on the opponent. I'm just thinking that Anthony Robinson is one of those players because we don't necessarily have a backup that I think we're all completely confident as to who would be back. I mean, Serginho Dest, we could put him out there, but that's not his best spot. Yeah. So I don't know. There's no real
Walker Zimmerman for me is Walker Zimmerman only because he's been the one consistent thing for the last months that I worry about. And finding another combination pairing, I'm not saying Walker Zimmerman is the best center back we've ever had by any means, but within this national team, he has brought some comfort to me in terms of whoever you put next to him can be complimentary. He can lead that back line. I found some peace or I guess comfort in him being on the field. If he wasn't, I do worry about what's the combination pairing at the World Cup level. But the other ones like left back, right back, Serginho Dest, switch him to the left, no problem. Like DeAndre Yedlin. those have always been like issues that you can stop, like you can plug up, you know, you can kind of plug that hole. You might not have the same level, but kind of up the spine is where I worry the most. And Charlie's got a good point with Yunus Musah as well. Like just right up the middle is where I start to get nervous.
Okay, but we haven't mentioned Weston McKennie, who's actually the player that's hurt, Charlie. So I think we could probably live and survive and be fine without Weston McKennie, even though he does bring a lot of intangibles. And as we mentioned before, he's probably our must clutch player in the pool.
Yeah, but I'd also touch on what Heath just said, the spine, right? That's so important. It's critical to a team's success. That's where our kind of our weakness is, right? The striker position, even though Jesus Ferrer is balling right now, I don't want to take anything away from his progress and what he's doing in MLS. But you would have to say the nine and the center back position, not that we're worried about the goalkeeper position, but, you know, I think now that Zach Steffen has consistent game time and now Matt Turner, who had kind of really taken the number one as his own with his performances, is now not going to play. He's not going to play a single league game unless Ramsdale gets injured for the next 6 months. So if you're looking at the spine, I'd say that is where we are weakest.
Okay. Now let's talk about Brendan Aaronson a little bit, just because he is coming off a pretty successful game against Cagliari and leads a 6-2 win over the Serie A club. He had a couple assists. The way that he drives forward, attacks the space if he has it in front of him. Obviously, his change of speed, Heath, is next level with the ball in particular. This is all good signs. I mean, I think obviously he had a pretty decent price tag moving from RB Salzburg to Leeds, and obviously having an American manager, there was going to be some pressure bringing in an American, and Tyler Adams as well got to play. Now they rated we'll leave Tyler Adams out of it right now. Brendan Aaronson, an 8 out of 10 based on his performance. And I think that bodes well for him, but I love the spots that he's picking the ball up. It's more central to what Charlie was saying before, that even if Weston McKennie does go down or anybody else in midfield, Brendan Aaronson can slot in there and make a real difference.
Yeah. I mean, the thing about Brendan Aaronson, I'm just trying to keep it into perspective of who they're playing
against. Wait. So you're not going to overhype him like you did with Ricardo Pepi and then.
No, I'm still hot on Ricardo Pepi, Jim. Don't worry about that. But Brendan Aaronson, Jim, is one that I'm like, I go back to a memory that I had where we played in the cup when I first got to the Bundesliga. We played in a cup game and I had a couple assists and I was feeling on top of the world. And I whipped in a couple really good balls and it was against the lower division team. And I remember thinking like, wow, this is like, I think I can, you know, I was playing at the level of the players that I was coming in to play with, but we were playing against a lesser opponent, similar to what I think Leeds was playing. And I remember a teammate coming up to me and saying like, do it in the Bundesliga and then feel good about yourself. And I remember thinking about that, like, man, this guy was really harsh on me. Like, for a performance like that and thinking about that, I always try to keep that in the perspective of like, it's a long season, do it in the Premier League, because while his tools are going to translate immediately, there is going to be high highs and low lows of playing for a club like Leeds in the Premier League. That's going to be a lot harder to consistently put up the numbers that perhaps we expect of him that comes with his price tag. But in terms of his overall performance, I thought it was fantastic and one that hopefully gives him this belief and ability of, hey, I'm wearing this shirt of a Premier League club and I'm able to take over games and moments. That's something that you go from Brendan Aaronson, the worry of, can he play in Europe at a high enough level? Is he physical enough? Can he handle the demands there? Takes that on, goes to the next level, does well in the Champions League. And now he's got his next challenge, which is going to be even more physical. The game's going to be faster than perhaps even what Champions League is playing in the Premier League week in and week out. But I'm interested to see how he responds to the challenges that are going to be in front of him. But do it in the Premier League first, Jimmy, is my message.
Well, he's going to get that opportunity this weekend when Leeds host Wolves in the first game of the Premier League season. We'll see how he performs. We'll see if he gets the start. It's looking like he is and will. And Tyler Adams also got to start against Cagliari, so we'll see if that maintains that starting status for the game against Wolves. He got a 6 out of 10. They said he was solid, kept it moving, and the quote was, very intense when pressuring the ball. Sounds about right. Hey, you know, the captain of the US.
Who's giving these ratings, Jim?
It's the local Leeds people. I don't know. I'm just looking at I believe everything.
No, I'm just wondering, like, was it a website or was it like a supporter group that did it? Or
yeah.
Sorry. Let me see. No, it wasn't a supporters group. It was let me go back that far again because I moved on to my Brandon Vasquez research. But
Was it the New York
it was
Post
like a, it was like Sun-Daily? Like the Chronicle or whatever, the Leeds Chronicle.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a local outlet and publication. So
you're spending £1 a month, Jimmy, for your subscription.
You know what?
The,
I'm trying to follow my guys. So looking ahead to this European season, Charlie, I'll go to you on this. Are there any players that you're excited to see get this opportunity? Obviously, Chris Richards, will he be slotted in immediately for Crystal Palace's game against Arsenal this Friday? That'll be interesting to see if Patrick Vieira leans on him right away. Obviously, the Leeds guys and Brendan Aaronson and Tyler Adams, and obviously Jesse Marsh starting off on the right foot from a managerial perspective. Anybody else, though, that maybe you're excited to see get cracking with this European season about to begin?
Yeah, Luca Della Torre with Celta de Vigo.
Good one, good one.
Obviously, Zach Steffen with Middlesbrough to see him. And
is there a rumor, by the way, of Della Torre getting time? He's one that I haven't heard about in terms of like, you know, we're hearing the rumors of like could slot into the starting lineup on opening weekend type of thing with Chris Richards and whatnot. Has anybody heard for Della Torre?
No, there hasn't been as much chatter around him. I think from what I understand, the coach is saying he wants to bring him in. He's a fan of his game, but he's got to get him assimilated into the tactics and how the team wants to move. I mean, you can take that for what it is, but that's...
And to be honest, Yunus Musa has had an incredible preseason with Valencia in a central midfield role. So they've moved him now from the winger position, which really didn't fit, to now that central midfield position, which he plays with the U.S. men's national team, and he's looked electric. So I'm really pumped to see what he can do this year in La Liga.
Yeah, Yunus Musa for Valencia plays Girona on Sunday, August 14th. Girona is the team that Tati Castellanos just went to from NYCFC. Celta Vigo hosts Espanyol on Saturday, August 13th. The first game of La Liga will be a week from Friday, August 12th. Osasuna takes on Sevilla. Any other names, though, that we're excited about? Obviously, we have Haji Wright. I'm curious to see how he's going to start the Super League. And these guys, Ricardo Pepi. The Bundesliga, when that gets going, which is, I think, starts off on Friday as well. Heath, anybody in Germany outside of Ricardo Pepi? Are you hearing anything about Pepi?
I mean, he's doing well in the matches. Obviously, they put a beating on somebody, and he had a couple good balls, through balls. He was active in the attack from wider areas, but he looks solid. But anytime you see a 6-0, you always hope that you see Ricardo Pepi on the score sheet. I think it was 6-0 or something like that in a cup match. But he's one that again has to come up. What's that?
I think it was
an MLS style assist where it was the through ball that set up like kind of an easy pass for a tap in. So in theory, it was involved in the buildup or started the buildup for a goal, which was nice. Nice little clip over the top to a player in behind. So that was good. I'm trying to think. In my mind of who could really kind of have a breakout with the European seasons. It's still, to me, it comes back down to Vasquez and what he's doing right now. I continue to be impressed. I don't know what your guys' takes are on Vasquez, not the European season related, but just in terms of our number nine depth and trying something and bringing in a player that's in top form that still hasn't been involved yet.
What I find interesting about Brendan Vasquez, I'll go first here, resident number nine, Charlie Davies, is that he didn't even get named to the MLS All-Star team. And given the numbers that he has going, it's I don't say embarrassing, but what else does the guy have to do to be in consideration for that? He had another two goals this weekend in a crazy 4-4 game against Inter Miami. He plays for FC Cincinnati. There's another 4-4 game between the Timbers and Minnesota United. So two 4-4 games this particular weekend. But Brendan Vasquez is currently third in the league in scoring. We have Sebastian Driussi from Austin is on top with 14 goals. Tate Castellanos is on 13. He's going to stay at 13 because he left. And Brendan Vasquez also on 13. His contribution, goal scoring contribution, is pretty high. 35% of his team's goals are scored by him. But it's not only that. I think to Heath's point, he's also bringing other players into the game. He's also having good holdup play. He's scoring different types of goals, Charlie. I think he's got a legitimate chance. I don't know. Maybe you bring him in for the September window. I wouldn't mind seeing him at this point to see how he really fits in with the rest of the group. And we've done it with other players, Haji Wright in particular, maybe the last example. So why not Brendan Vasquez at this point?
Yeah. You know, when you say, why didn't he make the MLS All-Star game? When I look at the players he's competing over, he's not better than them. You know, in terms of what you get from him, yeah, he's scoring goals, but overall quality, when I'm looking at a player and I've watched Brendan Vasquez now live a couple of times, Yes, he puts himself in good positions and makes good runs, but you're talking about, you have to take your game a whole nother level up with international quality. And not to say that he can't do it, but I haven't been moved to say, oh yes, that's the answer for us.
Charlie hates Brandon Vasquez. Heath, I don't know what you're reading up on.
That's what
I'm hearing. The guy's got 5 goals in his last 4 games, but Charlie's saying he's not good enough. It's fine.
Yeah, I mean, he had 2 against Miami.
But it was past the voting window.
Yeah.
That's true.
It's not.
Keep going, Charlie.
It's not the top team in MLS, the top defensive team. But yeah, I mean, he's not nowhere. He couldn't tie Tati Castellanos' shoes, right? Driussi. And
my guy hates potential U.S. national team players.
Jesus Ferreira is killing it. What are you talking about? He's got 12 goals and 5 assists.
Vasquez has 13 and 4, but yes, okay.
The way he's done it is much more impressive. That's what I'm saying. If you watch the game.
Charlie's out here saying a goal is a goal, and now he's saying those goals don't count.
Okay. a player like Luca Toni, right? If you watch Luca Toni, and there's certain strikers, at Jordan Pefok, they play a certain style.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that Brandon Vasquez couldn't adapt or change, but from what I'm watching, I don't know if that's the answer for this group, but a call up in September, I think we would definitely have an opportunity to see how that would look and how he could, you know, potentially play with that group of players in the international game. So I'm okay with him getting called in if he's scoring goals like this left and right. But it's the same thing as Jeremy Obobese. He was pace for pace with Brandon Vasquez in terms of goals. You're going to tell me that he's the answer at 9 for us? I'd say no.
Okay, so let's talk about
Jordan
Pefok.
Jimmy, let me ask you this real quick before we go to Pefok. Do you think that there is a little bit of bias in the fact that Brandon Vasquez isn't young? He wasn't proven in the early years. Like, he's 23 years old now, rounding into form for the first time. Sort of the natural trajectory of what you would have any player that was a non-striker. But do you think there's a little bit of that against him, considering it doesn't really fit the mold of our you know, Ricardo Pepi, 18, 19 years old, that type of thing? Or do you think it's just literally, you know, the lack of the all-star call up. Okay, I get it, because there is, for anybody that doesn't know, it's voting. Then you have the coaches' picks, then you have the commissioner's picks. And so he wasn't going to get voted in. And that's a crapshoot, but like, coaches' picks didn't go with him. And then you have the commissioner's picks. And so do you think that they're outside of that for him as a player within the national team? Do you think it just doesn't fit that the sexiness that we like of a player?
Who's he going to play over? Who's he going to play over? Who would he be picked over in terms of
strikers? Okay. Well, I just feel like, okay, let's leave that's true on the all-star stuff. I mean, there's other guys that are killing it. I agree with you on that, Charlie. But from a national team perspective, I wouldn't mind seeing him get a call in. I mean, we didn't see Team Away at the 9 at any point over the 4 June games. And that kind of bummed me out, because I wanted to see what that looked like as we put more of our players that have been playing at a high level on the field together at the same time. Now, Heath, you're talking about Brandon Vasquez like he's 29 years old, getting close to the wrong side of 30. Dude's 23. It's not like he's too far away from the youth model that I think, but maybe.
Yeah, but he was in Atlanta, didn't score goals. You know what I mean? Like, he's been around, like, the name has been around. It's not like Ricardo Pepi was a kid and then all of a sudden scored a bunch of goals. And we were like, oh man, look at this guy who's arrived on the scene. This is a guy who's finding goals now 5 years into his professional career.
Yeah. But maybe look at Chris Wondolowski is a perfect example of taking a while to find his groove and get his confidence and really know who he is and what he's about. And I know there's already beef from national team fans about Chris Wondolowski. We'll leave that for another time. I also saw somebody in the comments saying that Vasquez is just a poacher. Dude, Chicharito's just a poacher. Mexico would kill to have Chicharito at this point. I think at least the players. I don't know about Tata Martino, but there's room for a poacher.
Was a poacher.
There's a ton of
Ruben Nistelrooy was something else. I mean, let's not
Charlie just got triggered by that, by the way.
He was incredible.
No, but he still scored all of his goals within the 8 yards of the box. It wasn't like what we're expecting of a guy to hit bangers from everywhere.
All I have to say is you saw Ruben Nistelrooy's goal where he chipped the keeper. He takes a touch, goes out wide, and then chips it. It might have been a lot of close range goals, but there was so much variety with the type of goals he scored.
But you agree that having a poacher on a squad is a good thing to have, somebody that gets in and around the goal. And right. So I'm just saying,
Pippo Inzaghi was one of the best poachers ever. He never scored. He couldn't even hit the target if he was outside the box.
But Pifok is not going to be that guy for us. He misses center in Mexico.
The main striker for Italy.
Yeah, but I mean, if we have guys that aren't fulfilling those rules. Okay, keep going.
I'm just saying, he brought up Inzaghi. Inzaghi, incredible poacher, but not with the Italian national team. He was never the go-to striker for the Italian national team because you need to have a little bit more than just being a poacher. That's at the end of the day, you have to adjust. Maybe it's a game where you have to defend a lot and you have to be able to know how to press, lead the press, win fouls, hold up play. So being a poacher, it doesn't matter in that instance because you have to bring other players into the game. You have to bring basically relieve pressure and allow, you know, a Christian Pulisic, a Timo Weah, Gio Reyna, play them into the channels. So if you're a poacher, you're useless. But in a game where you're down a goal in the World Cup and you're like, all right, we need a poacher. We need somebody because we have possession. We're whipping balls in, but we have nobody to finish. That's a perfect substitution. So yes, but I will say, there's also Doran Pifok who's playing in Bundesliga. If he starts scoring, there's your poacher. That's a guy
who
can't do anything else but score. He can't run the channels. He can't press. He's not fast, but he's strong. He can hold up the ball and he can finish in the box. So you need a player to get it, come in and change the game just with goal scoring. There's your guy.
Listen, I'm here putting my flag in the ground to say that I want Jordan Pifok to absolutely crush it in the Bundesliga, and I want him to get called back in because I want him to have a chance at redemption for the miss that he had in Mexico that everybody are going to remember about his stint with the national team unless he has other opportunities. I think he has it in him. It's just a matter of confidence. Confidence is a hell of a drug, and he needs a little bit of it. And when you're a goal scorer, you got to hit the back of the net to start
He just scored in the cup right now. He just scored in the cup. Literally, as we're talking, he scored in the cup for the DFB.
What kind of goal, Heath? So. What kind of goal? Do you see it?
I don't know. I don't have it. I read it in the chat from our producer, and then I went to Chemnitz. Chemnitzer.
You've heard of them?
I think they have. I've definitely heard of them, but like I don't know anything about.
Listen, a goal is a goal is a goal.
No, I'm just saying. Charlie. I just asked if you've heard of the club before because I feel like I've seen a lot of clubs in my time, and I've never seen and I've played Championship manager, you're a pretty, avid fan. You know the teams in the league and the world. I've never heard of this team in my life. I've never seen it. But hey, a goal is a goal.
A goal is a goal. Hopefully it was a pretty one.
They are definitely in East Germany. It's a cup match. But that's the good thing about the cup matches there is the tune up. You get one before the actual league starts. So it's to be able to score, keep on going.
Yeah, you got to keep on going. Wherever you're going to get them. Preseason against...
They're in the regional league. It's like the fourth division. So I think they have the three Bundesligas now, and then they get into the regional ligas. So I think against the fourth division team, which is expected. He's expected to score, but,
Yeah, and I want Hashi Wright to play well, too. I just want as many guys as possible playing at the highest level so we have a plethora of options to choose from when it comes to naming the 26-man World Cup squad. That is going to be a lot of pressure. And what I found interesting was that Walker Zimmerman and Tyler Adams had both come out over the last month or two saying that they might approach things a little bit different because nobody wants to get hurt. And obviously, when you see Miles Robinson go down with an Achilles, you're just, oh, man, I'm going to tiptoe around. And I'm curious how the guys, not only our guys, but national team players around the world are going to approach the next few months because this is a life-changing event. This is an experience that no one can take away from you once you do get there and represent your country. So it's interesting how different guys are going to approach it. And some guys are going to get hurt. That's the unfortunate part of this. All right, we're going to take our first and only break of In Soccer We Trust. When we come back, we're going to talk about Gaga Slonina making the big move from the Chicago Fire to another team that starts with a CH, Chelsea. So don't go anywhere.
Did you know that while over 60% of Americans dream of starting their own business, less than 20% of them take the first step? The reason? Building a business is tough. Tailored Brands is simplifying the business journey. From launching and managing to growing your business, Tailored Brands isn't just another tool. It's your online business partner from launch to success. With Tailored Brands, building your dream business becomes an effortless experience. Their comprehensive platform guides you through every step, ensuring you have everything you need in one place. From LLC formation to bookkeeping, invoicing to acquiring licenses and permits, and even setting up your bank account. Taylor Brands handles it all seamlessly. And our listeners will receive 35% off Taylor Brands LLC formation plans using our link, taylorbrands.com/CBS Sports. That's TAILORBRANDS.com/CBS Sports. So start your business journey today with Taylor Brands.
CBS Wednesday.
We have so many cool, diverse people from different backgrounds, different beliefs, different upbringings, and it just keeps growing.
I'm a citizen of the United States.
I'm a hustler.
I'm a big Taylor Swift fan.
I'm the queen of the tribe. I'm a
survivor. I am playing whatever role I gotta play.
I'm gonna play this game full speed.
I ain't going down like no punk.
A new Survivor, Wednesday on CBS and streaming on Paramount Plus.
Welcome back, everybody, to In Soccer We Trust. I'm Jimmy Conrad alongside Charlie Davis and Heath Pierce. And we just had a scintillating conversation about our player pool and Weston McKennie's injury. We know he'll get back, but still a little bit nervous about what that means overall, the bigger picture of just injuries in general and how that could impact our team heading into the World Cup and at the World Cup itself. But now let's talk about some positive news. Let's talk about the positive ripple effects of a homegrown teenage goalkeeping sensation in Gaga Slonina going from the Chicago Fire and then to Chelsea, which is pretty significant. Now, he's going to stay with the Chicago Fire for the rest of the season and join Chelsea on January 1st, 2023. But this is a big move, and obviously it's looking forward for Chelsea as they look for a long-term backup for Edouard Mendy, who arguably is the best goalkeeper in the world. Kepa looks like he's going to be on the move looking for a loan right now. But Heath, I'll come to you first. Gaga Slonina, he could have gone to a couple clubs. I guess Real Madrid was interested as well, but he ends up settling on Chelsea. Pretty big deal.
Yeah, it's a big deal, but I worry about, again,
he came in early with the butt, Charlie. He came in real early with the butt.
Yeah, it should be a butt. How many Chelsea players outside of Christian Pulisic, who got bought for a lot, have done anything at Chelsea? They're notorious for their loan system. Now, if he gets loaned to the right clubs along the way and he gets the minutes that we need for him to develop, great. I like that they're buying him on potential. But the things that Charlie mentioned in his analysis of Slonina, I don't know, a month or two ago, about his feet and some of the things that need work aren't going to happen just in training. They need to be around games. So if he's going to find himself there and buried in a lineup or going out on loan in unstable situations, might be good for him, but also might be to the detriment of his development. That's my current take on it. But the fact that it's happening and there's that interest, I'm really excited about that. And it's a validator to, again, the quality of player. And been a while, when you think about Sean Johnson and Bill Hamid and that window of players, since we saw a young goalkeeper go to Europe and you know, who was the last one? Brad Kazan, maybe, outside of what we're seeing now with Matt Turner and Zach Steffen. I guess Zach Steffen would have been the one. But we've been known for our famous goalkeepers is what sort of put soccer right on the map for us in the US. And to see another one at a young age going abroad, or at least signing with a team abroad, is pretty cool.
I liked you ended on a positive because your negative energy was bringing me down, Heath. Charlie, what are you saying about Gaga Slonina? And I agree with Heath that it's there's a lot to do. Yes, this is a good thing, and it sounds nice. And we saw it with Eric Palmer Brown when he left Kansas City to go to Manchester City, but has actually never played for Man City, only met Pep Guardiola once when we had him on the show. That's what he told us, which I found to be pretty phenomenal, and he's been on loan ever since. Gaga Slonina must have something in place or some type of verbal agreement or something on paper that says, hey, you come to us, you're going to stay with us, we're going to help develop you. But we all know that getting games is the most important thing, especially for young goalkeepers.
Yeah, I think for Gaga Slonina, the most important thing is development by playing. He needs to be playing matches. Now, I think what's great about Chelsea is you can go to get proper coaching. I mean, not that he's not getting proper coaching with Aidan Brown, who is an incredible goalkeeper. But I think when you're talking about a young player who he's motivated, he's wise well beyond his years. I mean, he's got like a drive about him. He's very smart. He's trying to do everything in his power to make sure that he reaches his full potential. So to stay humble and just continue to work, I think if he goes and gets some coaching, then goes back on loan, that's what's going to be important for him, is just continuing to play at the highest level, playing with first teams and not with reserve sides. And so I think from a shot stopping perspective, he is incredible, but has to learn to play with his feet has to learn a little bit more with the nuances. We're always learning, but it's exciting.
Okay, so I'm going to ask you, put you back on the spot here, on the hot seat here, Charlie, to be a master prognosticator. Look into your crystal ball, and do you think that Gaga Salonina will be our number one in 2026? Do you think that he's going to grow that rapidly? Very similar to Donnarumma with Italy, who was a young goalkeeper that ended up being the best player of the tournament in the Euros last summer for the Italians, even though they couldn't qualify for the last two World Cups. I mean, what do you say about his potential? And do you think his potential is going to be big enough and he's going to reach that potential and overshadow some of our other guys that are solid, including Matt Turner, who we like to hope will get some valuable minutes with Arsenal over the next few seasons?
I mean, Matt Turner would be 32. So you're coming into your prime. Zach Steffen, same thing, 32, 33. So not that I would say no chance that he could be the one, but it's going to be difficult. Whoever's the one in 2026, you can believe that they are the consistent one at their club and they're playing regularly. And there's a lot of talent at that position for the U.S. So it'll be very difficult for Salonina to be playing as the one, considering he still probably have to work his way up. Mendy's a young, pretty young keeper. I don't see him going away.
He's 30. So that's right.
So I think
I'm just throwing it out there. I wanted to give people some context as to how talented he is, but how much work there still is yet to be done, and what that means, even if he does start to emerge as like this incredible world-class talent, which obviously there's identification of that.
I mean, I will say 4 years is a long time. If we have one of those three that doesn't play for the next 3 years, they're not going to be in the national team pool anymore. That's what I truly think 3 years from now. Matt Turner doesn't play for 3 years at Arsenal. Still an incredible story of his, but not going to be in the national team anymore. I think we're going to have more options in 3 years than we have now. And there's going to be more competition naturally in the national team that I don't think a window of time like that for a player going into the prime of their career will be valid. Same with Zach Steffen. If he ends up, you know, going somewhere and not playing for three seasons, it's going to be hard to justify that.
Though.
I fully agree that keepers are different, but if you were to add all that time together and say, well, you know, you got two starting years out of the last six or seven. I don't know if that's starting goalkeeper in the 2026 World Cup.
No, 100%. But what I'm saying is, you know, Ethan Horvath is 27 and he got the start and a clean sheet in his first championship match against Birmingham and a 0-0 shutout. Zach Steffen playing at Middlesbrough, Matt Turner, 28, playing I contracted to Arsenal, not playing. And then Salonina. I think of those three, at least one of them will be a consistent starter at a top club, a respected club. So, I mean, the it's there for the taking if Gaga Salonina can somehow go over to Europe and start playing for a top club. Maybe it's on loan for a few years outside of MLS in Europe, then sure. But I still feel very confident that we'll have a top keeper in 2026.
I just want to say
– let me ask you this real quick, Jimmy. I have a question for you. For our goalkeeper pool, right, this is an interesting sort of – dynamic of what's the right club for a goalkeeper, far different than me as a left back, Charlie as a striker, Jimmy as a center back, of where do you go? Because a lot of it's the training environment, which you get whether you're playing or not. And then it's the matches, right? So you go to Salzburg, for example, if you're a goalkeeper, very different than Brendan Aaronson, who's going to have the ball all the time, get the touches you want. Goalkeeper's probably not going to get as much love, right? Or much time in and around making saves and being involved. But like, what is that balance, at least Jimmy, in your take, or Charlie, of a like the right situation for a goalkeeper where they're getting challenged and tested in games, but they're not just going to a big club that's dominating and never getting, you know, or maybe that is the thing of making those two big saves a game that you have to if you're playing at a Celtic or a Rangers in Scotland on a loan deal.
Well, I think given what or where the U.S. men's national team is right now, where, you know, we're probably middle of the pack in terms of what we're capable of. We obviously can't hang with the big player, the big teams and you know, go against the biggest players, but also at times we struggle to break down a low block against El Salvador, right? So we're going to have times where we don't have a lot of the ball. We're going to have times where we do have a lot of it and we don't know how to break them down. And having a goalkeeper that's switched on to make that one or two big save, that timely save, I think is important. And I think there's there's room to have those experiences as a goalkeeper. But to have that for 38 games, probably not as great. I mean, I think you want to have that middle ground where you are kind of under the gun at times and you are having to manage the chaos. You have to be comfortable with being uncomfortable. And I think a goalkeeper that can manage their box, good coming off of their line, killing attacks by either putting guys in good spots or by, you know, with their feet or whatever is being expected out of them from how they play and how what their coach wants, is all important. So games are going to be it, right? Training most of the time, and we've been in enough trainings. Yes, it's, well, at least for the trainings I was in, 11v11 doesn't happen very often, maybe once a week. It's a lot of 7v7, 5v5, 8v8. It's just a complete shooting storm where it's more for the attackers than maybe it is for the goalkeepers. But I do like where Zach Steffen went with Middlesbrough. I they were 1 point away from finishing in the top six in the championship last year. They're adding some pieces, him included, that will maybe kick them on to play some really meaningful games and get into that championship playoff so they can get promoted into the Premier League next season. I want that for him. I want him to live through that and have that type of pressure and responsibility that I don't think he's had for quite some time with Manchester City, despite his one-off games with the FA Cup from time to time. So I think he's in a nice spot. Luton Town, where Ethan Horvath went on loan from Nottingham Forest. I don't know if they're going to be as competitive, but I think with a 0-0 clean sheet against Birmingham this past weekend, as Charlie mentioned, that's a good first start. First game, first clean sheet, and now he's going to really hopefully immerse himself into the rest of the team and that back line in particular. So I'm kind of leaning more towards what Zach Steffen is doing, but I don't know if I would want to go to a Salzburg that completely dominates every single game and not really get enough of the action. But maybe Charlie feels a little bit different.
No, I think it's different for a field player. You want to, depending on what type of player you are, you want to have possession, you want to be dominating, you want to be competing in Europe. I think for a keeper, the English Championship is a beast. So you're playing a lot of games, the repetition's there, and the parity is not crazy. So you're kind of in every game. It's super competitive. I think that's a great place for a keeper to grow. You're going to get a lot of chances, a lot of opportunities, and for Ethan Horvath and Zach Steffen, it's a fantastic move this year because you're playing a lot of games and you're coming into the World Cup super confident and fit and hopefully healthy. So I would feel, and I feel like most U.S. men's national team supporters would feel much more confident and comfortable with your keepers coming in, having played a vast amount of games and having to, you know, basically be in tune with the speed of play in the championship because it's so hectic and a lot of set pieces and crosses. And so you just feel that much more, I think, confident heading into the World Cup with Zach Steffen and Ethan Horvath both playing.
Charlie, let me ask you this then. How different do you think, in your opinion, or, you know, Jimmy, jump in on this too, do you think is a situation where Slonina is going to be 18, right? So put it into like dog years, like he's like a 15-year-old field player, going into a Chelsea environment and training every single day with the first team, right? Getting probably reserve matches, but training every day with the first team in that environment at 18 years old versus a Zach Steffen who's 27, right? Who's been through that now. He's been in that environment. And you talk about the importance. And I remember Matt Turner mentioning just the importance of the value that Greg Berhalter held for Zach Steffen being in Man City's environment versus playing week in and week out at New England Revolution. And I'm just trying to compare that to Gaga Slonina at his age, soaking in a first team environment and the competitive nature and facing shots from the best strikers in the world for a couple of years without having to be in a rush versus Zach Steffen, who actually needs to take that experience of being in the club and now apply it to matches played. I'm just thinking, I guess my question is, do you think that Gaga Slonina needs to be playing now as well? Or would it be a better situation for him to be in an environment like Chelsea training every single day?
No, he needs to be
playing.
Where
is there more value coming from?
Playing, because he's so young. At this point, it's just playing. Playing in Major League Soccer at that age as your starter, that's an incredible experience, and it's so valuable. I think that's going to help him in the long term more so than being a young keeper who will probably be the fourth or fifth keeper on that Chelsea roster and kind of just being on the outskirts. You know, you're not really used in the 11v11 anyways. You really want to be the backup keeper if you're in that situation, because you know you'll get a game here or there, injury, suspension. But if you're the fourth, fifth keeper, it's so much more important to be playing for a first team like Chicago Fire and getting matches and getting shots.
Okay, so the pro tip I want to give to all the goalkeepers in our player pool is that the sooner you get bald, the better chance you are to be an absolute legend for the national team. Tim Howard, Brad Friedel, Casey Keller, Marcus Hanneman, Brad Guzan. Like, if things just started popping off for Guzan when he started to lose his hair. Just wanted to throw that out there. So whoever really wants to get in there and get bald, I think you've got a great, great chance of being our number one for the foreseeable future. All right, let's talk about some notable names that happened around the U.S. Men's National Team player pool, both domestically in MLS and around Europe and around the world. Not only did Jordan Pifok just score in the DFB Pokal, the cup competition in Germany, so did Joe Scally this past weekend for Borussia Mönchengladbach in their 9-1 win over Oberarken. I don't even know, but he scored.
That's
he
one I haven't heard of.
And scored. So, regardless, a goal is a goal is a goal, and it's good to see Joe Scally out there performing and doing well. In the Scottish Premiership, Rangers were down 1-0 to Livingston, and they came back after Malik Tillman and James Sands came on the field and came back to win that one 2-1. And Tillman came on at halftime and had played so well in the second half. They're looking to maybe start him in the Champions League qualifier this upcoming week, which would be a very big deal. James Sands got in with the last 23 minutes, but that was still with the game in the balance. They were down 1-0 when he came on and helped. It also turned around to 2-1. Those are good positive things for those two players in particular. Other ones that stand out for me, Josh Sargent got 72 minutes in a 1-0 loss at Cardiff. I did see some chatter online about how Josh Sargent went from being kind of one of our number nines that we were going to rely on moving forward to just being a really hardworking winger that doesn't do as much anymore. I don't know if you guys want to comment on that. Brian Reynolds got 7 minutes as a substitute. I wanted to say and ask you, Heath, because I know that you are close with Mark McKenzie. He was in the 18 for Genk when they took on Standard Liège this past weekend, but he did not play in their 3-1 win. You had mentioned that he was kind of on, or that the things were changing. He was being captain and all that stuff, and now he's in the 18 and doesn't play. Was there an injury, or what kind of insight can you give us on that? Because obviously that's a big position for us as we try to fill that center back spot.
Yeah, I think that's going to come down to whether or not they sell John Lukumi. If they sell Lukumi, then I think he naturally slots into that position. And that's just a matter of moving him or not. I think if they don't, I assume that he'll go on loan. That's where I think that lies, because I don't think he'd be comfortable or willing to. I'm speaking for him, and I don't know, but knowing that it's a World Cup year, if the writing's on the wall that the player that they're meant to sell, I think it was like Leipzig and a couple other clubs that were trying to come in on Lukumi, but he's got a pretty big price tag. If that doesn't happen, I could see him being sort of that last minute loan deal while the window is still open. But yeah, pretty disappointing having talked to him a couple weeks ago was the last time I talked to him, and he was mentioning sort of just the energy around it, the trust from the coach, you know, got the band in one of the preseason matches, which again is, doesn't mean anything other than like a trust and a leadership type of thing. So I could see that playing out as we look towards the end of the window, perhaps having to make a move in order to force his hand to get the minutes that he needs in a World Cup year, but also just for his own development after coming off of last year, a pretty rough year, a couple coaches, things like that. So I could see something's going to give in the coming weeks in that one.
What's interesting is that because the seasons are starting again in Europe, it feels like the transfer window is over, but there's still actually 30 days. They have the whole month of August to have transfers. So I'm curious to see what kind of moves are going to be made by multiple teams around the world as they try to strengthen for this upcoming season and ahead of the World Cup. Now, Charlie, not only that, you mentioned Richie Ledesma a little bit earlier. He came off the bench for PSV, who is now coached by Ruud van Nistelrooy, in their 5-3 win, their surprising 5-3 win over Ajax in the Dutch Super Cup. So that was pretty interesting. Jordi Mihailović is back and healthy, played 82 minutes for Montreal this past weekend against New York City FC. It was a 0-0 draw. Nico Giacchini did not play in their 2-1 win. 2-1 loss Orlando City had. They were up 1-0, by the way. We had Oscar Pereira on last week. If you didn't catch that interview, he was gracious and awesome, and we hope to have him on the show again. I thought they were going to go up to DC and get an easy 3 points. They should have been up 3-0 at halftime, or at least through 60 minutes, and DC scored two goals in the 91st minute and 95th minute to steal all 3 points. Oscar Pereira's got to be absolutely gutted. They should have put that one away, but Giacchini didn't play in that one. He did play in their 5-1 win over New York in the Open Cup semifinals. Cameron Carter-Vickers got 90 minutes in their 2-0 win for Celtic over Aberdeen. And any players that jump out for you, Charlie Davies, before we start to get to our final?
I think you wanted to mention something about Josh Sargent. What were you going to say, Charlie?
Yeah, nothing. I got nothing. I think Malik Tillman is an interesting one with Rangers, so I'll keep my eye out on him and his performances. And Richie Ledesma is super talented. You can see when he comes into the game, what he has a different dynamic. So I'm under Ruud van Nistelrooy as the manager, maybe this is a season where he takes that step forward. So I'll be watching. PSV are another top club in Holland, so they'll be competing in Europe. So
I want to go back though. Did you want to say something about Josh Sargent? Do you feel
no?
You have to have some thoughts on him. I mean, he went from kind of being our hopeful, our guy, and now he's not, and he's like so far off.
But this is again goes back to teenage years to like you fast forward 2, 3, 4 years, you get a wrong move, and now you're four. I'm not saying it was a wrong move. Maybe it's the right move for him for a number of reasons, but in terms of the stability of trajectory of development,
a certain position. He's been playing winger. I mean, he's an outside midfield winger now, and him as an outside winger midfielder is irrelevant for the US at least. Mm-hmm. Like that's never a fit. So,
Tough. It's tough. All right, just
Richie Ledesma, by the way, Jimmy.
Go ahead. Talk to me about Ledesma.
I think sometimes we because of injuries and whatnot, like PSV Eindhoven is a massive club. Like that is a really big club. And the fact that he's getting minutes and now coming up, I think is, as Charlie said, could be a huge year if under Ruud van Nistelrooy, he gets the minutes, but that is a big club to be getting minutes from. And from like a footballing system or style of play, a big deal. And one that could be a surprise addition come September, or could be a World Cup inclusion, or could still end up becoming a really, really impactful player for our national team. So I don't want to, just because he hasn't been in the mix for the last couple of years, I don't want to write him off on that, because his pathway, I think, at the club that he's at and the fact that he's getting minutes and what his potential is could be something special for us.
No, I agree with you 100%. It looks like maybe this cycle will come too soon, but 2026, you never know. He's only 21. He played 5 games in the Eredivisie last year and had 1 goal. We'll see. With getting some minutes here in the Super Cup, we'll see if that translates into more minutes when the domestic league gets going in earnest. All right, final thoughts from you guys. I do want to say that as a little teaser, we're going to have LAFC coach and one of our former national team teammates, Steve Trundolo, on the show this week. We're just trying to finalize the times for all that, but we're very excited to talk to Steve and obviously get some insight on what it's like to coach Gareth Bale and Chiellini and Carlos Vela and everything else that he's trying to juggle over there. But it looks like everything's going pretty easy. Must be nice to be Steve Trundolo right now. So make sure you mark that on your calendars for later this week. Turn on your notifications, hit like and subscribe, all that good stuff on all the audio platforms as well. Heath, I'll come to you first. Any final thoughts about anything that you want to talk about U.S. soccer related?
Not particularly. It's pretty clear that Charlie doesn't like Brandon Vasquez.
I wanted to get into that some more.
I don't think I need any more clarity.
I thought you were going to bring up Ric Flair. Like his last match, wrestling match.
Oh, that is true. That is true.
Shout out to Ric Flair.
Ric Flair, the Nature Boy. Woo!
Yeah. And rest in peace, Bill Russell, who obviously came and talked to us before the 2010 World Cup, came and talked to the team in camp and gave some words of wisdom. And I saw U.S. Soccer post a photo of him next to Gooch, who's one of the bigger people I know, and he just like dwarfs Gooch in the photo, which is crazy.
Okay, Charlie, any final thoughts? Maybe you want to explain yourself a little bit more about Brandon Vasquez. I don't know.
No, all I have to say is cream cheese, Jimbo. You've done an impressive job.
Yeah, great work today, Jim. Great work, Jim.
You have done an awesome job moderating this podcast, running it.
I do.
So keep it going.
Jimbo, all right, we're going to call it a show. We're calling it a show. I can't deal with all this praise. We're calling it a show. So on behalf of producer Dez, producer Alex, Charlie Chuck Wagon Davies, Hollywood Heath Pierce, I'm Jimmy Cream Cheese Conrad saying thank you for listening and watching In Soccer We Trust. And we will see you next time with our main man, Steve Trundolo. Later.
The baseball season is in full swing, which means you need to listen to Fantasy Baseball Today, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Stanfill, every weekday as we recap every player from every game. We'll talk waiver wire ads, drops, players to trade for, prospects who could make an impact, and everything in between. Make sure to download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and everywhere else podcasts are found.